Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
My father was a big influence in my life. Now, when I was back in Nebraska, growing up in a small town, I grew up in Norfolk, Nebraska. Every night, Dad, somebody's applauding with one hand. What? Are you from Norfolk? Are you?
No.
Where are you from?
Sacramento.
It's net time tonight. Well, it's all right. That's nice of you to apply at Norfolk. But every Saturday night, he had a big influence on my life. Every Saturday night, he would.
Where were we?
I don't know. I was back in Norfolk. I don't know where the hell you're at. But I'm going back Midwest. Every Saturday night, he'd go down to the general store, sit around the cracker barrel.
Who is this you're speaking of?
It's my father.
Oh, your father.
Back in Nebraska, who had a big influence on my career. This guy from Sacramento had screwed me. I'd have been through this by now.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find.
He's the best thing to happen to the environment since the solar-powered hamster wheel. Great. Now he's putting hamsters out of business. Here he is, Mike Novak.
One more time. Okay, thank you. Hey, happy Father's Day, everybody. All you dads out there that has... wait a second. What?
I'm agreeing. Happy Father's Day.
And that was not your fault there. I didn't have your mic up, so you were ready to go.
Are you deleting me already?
Hey, no, Carol, I would never do that.
I know.
I would never do that. So, yes, you may wish fathers a happy Father's Day.
Yes. Happy Father's Day, everyone out there.
Just like Mother's Day, not a lot for me here. not a lot going on at the moment. So,
well, me either. So I'm not a father.
I know. So,
in case I need to clarify out there.
And you might, you never know. But I wish everybody a great day, especially dads. And I hope they get treated well. And then we go back to the rest of the year where it's, it's like moms too. They get that one year. What's that, Eden?
About moms.
It's all about
moms. The rest of the year.
No, actually, it's all about dads. And then moms get one day. You know how that works.
Oh, yeah.
Because, every Sunday is Father's Day.
That's true.
Let's watch golf. Let's watch football. Let's
mow the lawn.
Aren't you supposed to do that on Saturday? Sunday you can watch.
That's true.
Do something else, but... So there you have it. And a beautiful one. Wow. It's a surprise appearance by Summer. And I guess the whole week is going to be a little bit like Summer. And that's all right with me because it's about time the tomato plants started growing. Mine are lagging. Yours, Eden?
Yeah, they're lagging.
Okay. So, and by the way, that's one of my first guests in the show today, Eden DeGenova, who, the last time we actually talked on the radio, I think I was at Gargantua Radio down the dial, right?
Yeah. You were.
I wasn't
was
even here.
Many moons ago.
Many moon. And didn't you have something to do with my formative horticultural years?
I did. I was trying to explain that to Karen here this morning. I couldn't remember how that began. It began with a phone call. You called me and wanted information.
Really? Wow.
Is that what you remember?
I don't remember anything.
Yeah.
I just know that you were there.
I don't recall if you were already a master gardener or you were going to be a master gardener and wanted, I think you were a master gardener and wanted a place to do your thing. And so you called me.
That might have been it. I was looking for places where I could ply my trade.
Yes.
Where can I dig? Will somebody let me put a seed in the ground? Wouldn't that be fun?
You were very eager, I recall.
I was eager. As a matter of fact, I was too eager. I got, I remember I took the master gardener training at the Chicago Botanic Garden. And you worked there for a while.
Yes.
And I don't know if it was at the same time or around the same time, and that might have been the connection. But they had a bulletin board, and you could find jobs there. So this is before the days of the interwebs.
Yeah. You're aging us.
It doesn't take much because they haven't been around that long. You know, this whole idea where you just go to Angie's List or whatever and find something is relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, I found a couple of jobs up there. And one of them was, way over my head, basically way, way, way beyond my capacity.
I don't recall that.
Do you
remember where that was?
It was in the northern burbs, and I can't remember exactly which one. It was, you know, North Shore. Some guy wanted me to, like, redo his whole estate.
I think I recall that.
And,
yeah.
And like, from the house down to the retention pond. All 80 acres of it. And here I am, right out of Master Gardener training. Oh, I can have a light. Yep. Oh, boy. And, it makes me have to play this.
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it, Fred.
You know, and
it certainly was.
I was in that that kind of thing. And so here's this sweeping lawn and sweeping garden. And the garden is just riddled with leaves. With weeds. And me and my little hole and my trowel.
Mm-hmm.
And me running in there and practically rolling in it like a dog.
Yeah.
And getting the weeds out. And then discovering that there was poison ivy in it.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was in calamine lotion from head to toe. And the guy I was working for was a dermatologist. Are you right? Wait. Thank you. He was a dermatologist who didn't tell me that they had poison ivy because he said, he probably figured he's a master gardener. He should know that.
Or it was a plan to get another customer.
He didn't seem interested in having me as a customer because he knew I had no money. So it was the and then after I like rip out all these weeds out of master gardener training and I got like 80 yards down to the retention pond to fill, I bought three of everything to put in there and knew nothing about scope, size, sweep of how many plants. It was basically like three of everything.
Yeah. And it was like, here it is.
Here it is.
Here's my little
And then I'd step back and look. Wait, there's a lot of empty space there.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of empty space.
We'll stagger these plants.
And, of course, I was paying probably retail. I mean, it was just really bad, bad, bad stuff all the way down. The kind of thing, you know, and I wasn't. And the guy should have hired a landscaper. But he wanted it done on the cheap.
Of course. Of course.
And that's what happens. People want it done on the cheap, and they get the cheap. They get guys like me.
Yeah.
Of course, I've come a long way since then, meaning I don't do those jobs anymore because I know I'm out of my element.
Well, you can't get up anymore. It's like you get down there on your knees. It's like,
well, that's the other
somebody
thing.
Help
it's
me right. up.
That's the other thing. So that's Eden D. Genova, who's in the studio today with Karen Quick.
Quirk.
I'm sorry. I'm glad. Now that I got to change that, too. Hello. I'm having a good day already. And we're going to talk about tower gardens or tower garden. Do you prefer singular or plural?
We prefer plural because you want lots
you
of
want
them.
You want lots of them.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
All right. Which is an vertical aeroponic growing system, and we will get to that in just a second. Rick DeMaio weather, as always, at 9:45. Then the second, you know, it's just, this is an artsy kind of show today. In the second hour, I'm very pleased to have Sharon Bladholm, who's an artist in many media, including glass, including sculpture, including drawing. She created some art that I first got introduced to her because I saw her art at the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve back when it opened in 2011. I can't believe we're going on 3 years already for that. And she did microorganisms on parade. It was kind of cool on these bas-relief medallions that are in a retaining wall as you walk down the what is a road, actually used to be an access road, is now a path down to the lake. And you, if you haven't been there,
you
got
to
go.
See that.
You got to go. This is where they've preserved. This is the old Fort Sheridan.
Okay.
And they preserved the ravine and have replanted it with natives. And it's one of the few lakeshore ravine ecosystems on the planet.
Wow.
It's really awesome. It's a great place, and it's good that Openlands was able to acquire that. So anyway, Sharon will be here in the second hour, and I guess we're going to talk art and nature and how they kind of come together, all happening on the show. And, you know, maybe a few other things here. Carol's with us. Helen's with us. And you're with us. If you're listening, 773-763-9278 is the telephone number. You can always call in. You can always go to MikeNovak.net and get streaming, live streaming of the show or podcasts of the show. Or you can go to MikeNovak.net and look at our great sponsors. There's a link there. I hope you will go there. And let those folks know that they should continue to sponsor the show because it's really important to stay on the air. That's all hot. That's how these things work, folks. And I think I've got most of that covered. So let's get to Tower Gardens right after this.
Mosquito bites are painful and itchy, and mosquitoes can carry West Nile virus and other diseases. But there's an effective organic way to kill mosquitoes. Mosquito dunks are America's favorite organic mosquito killer because they kill mosquitoes before they are old enough to bite. The active ingredient in mosquito dunks kills mosquito larvae before they become flying, biting, disease-spreading adults. Just float a donut-shaped mosquito dunk in ponds, birdbaths, fountains, rain gutters, or any place where water collects to naturally kill mosquito larvae. Mosquito dunks are deadly to mosquitoes, but harmless to pets, people, fish, and other wildlife. Each mosquito dunk treats up to 100 square feet of water and will kill mosquito larvae for up to 30 days. So don't let disease-carrying mosquitoes ruin your summer. Stock up on mosquito dunks. You can find mosquito dunks and mosquito bits at home centers, garden centers, and hardware stores.
Hi, this is Ron Calgo from Mighty House. Remember that raffle the Illinois Solar Energy Association did last year where they raffled off a car? You didn't win? That's okay. I didn't either. The ISEA had so much success with the raffle last year that they decided to do it again. But this year, you have a chance to win an all-electric Tesla Model S and a Bosch 240-volt charger for only $100. The Tesla Model S is one sweet ride and was ranked best overall car by Consumer Reports this year. To have a chance to win, go to illinoisolar.org and click on the Tesla Model S link in the top left-hand corner. You can buy one ticket for $100 or four tickets for $300. Only 2,000 tickets will be sold. Net proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout Illinois.
Bosch Home EV Charger will be installed for free if the winner is within 50 miles of Chicago. Drawing will take place on October 4th, 2014. There is no limit on the number of tickets that can be purchased. Need not be present to win. If less than 1,500 tickets are sold, then the drawing converts to a 50-50 drawing. Tickets are only valid if sold in the continental U.S. The winner is responsible for all taxes, title, and destination charges. See the rules and regulations page at illinoisolar.org for more details.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545.
or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
In the Green Room with Mike is brought to you by Christy Weber Farm and Garden at CWFNG.com. Let them inspire you to create your own oasis.
And yeah, we're in the green room. And as I said before, I've got Eden Novak DeGenova, no relation because it's with a V. Or you could have changed it like my brother did.
Did he?
He did. He changed it from a W really? To a V.
Why?
He just got tired of people mispronouncing it. They always said Novak.
Right.
He said, well, then I'll just make it a V. And I said to him, that's the family name. You can't change the family name.
And he said, watch me.
I know. That's exactly what he said. And with Eden Novak DeGenova, and it's not DeGenova.
Well, it kind of is, because it's of Genoa.
But how do you pronounce it?
DeGenova.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
DeGenova.
DeGenova.
It's like defense.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Defense. And Karen Quirk. And you guys both kind of represent Tower Gardens, which made the news a couple of years ago when they got set up at O'Hare Airport.
Yes.
And a lot of people covered that story.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's there are 26 towers. Just amazing. 26 of these things. 1,000 plants growing there, including Swiss chard, arugula, basil, chives, cilantro, dill, sage, thyme, oregano, edible flowers, mixed lettuces, hot peppers. I mean, on and on and on. And it's right there between Terminal 2 and Terminal 3
yes.
at O'Hare. So if you walk by that, you see that. How did that get going? Either one of you, how did the O'Hare thing happen?
Well, the designer of the Tower Garden, the inventor, he was working at the lands at Epcot Center, Disney World, for years and years working on hydroponics and aeroponics, and he ended up designing this tower garden system and went out on his own and started making these projects all around the country. So O'Hare is not the only place. There's quite a few other restaurants and buildings that have the tower gardens that provide produce to restaurants and people all over the country. So
but that's one of the largest installations
yes.
of the Tower mm-hmm. Gardens.
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine that's probably the highest profile of the Tower Gardens, right? Unless you got something
there's
else.
There's a lot of projects going on in the works right now. So they're bigger and similar to O'Hare Airport, though. But the O'Hare Airport Tower Gardens feed the restaurants there too. So and they've also started.
Yeah, and it's a practical application.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. like the stuff is grown right there, goes right into to the restaurants. How mm-hmm. cool is that?
Yes.
Yep. Yep.
All right. So the guy who put these towers gardens together is named Tim Blank.
Yes.
And he was a greenhouse manager at Epcot. Working for the mouse and then started to work for himself.
Yes.
He created something called Future Growing.
Mm-hmm.
And then a company called Juice Plus, which is a company you work for,
mm-hmm.
Karen.
Yes.
Got interested in this. Why?
Well, the message that Juice Plus tries to give is to inspire healthy living through whole food. So Juice Plus came around 20 years ago, and it's a way to get fruits and vegetables in when it's difficult to do sometimes. So they figured out how to put fruits and vegetables in a capsule, and you know, people are able to get a variety of fruits and vegetables every day in their diet with that. So that message carries on. And when we heard about the Tower Gardens, the president of our company, Jay Martin, he just thought this is the perfect idea and everybody should have one of these in their backyard, on their back porch. And, you know, it's a way to get fresh, vine-ripened vegetables every day, herbs.
So do you guys have juicers too, or is that not part of what you do?
No, actually, that's what they were looking at 20 years ago.
Really?
Some form of juicer. And then they discovered this doctor that had figured out how to dehydrate fruits and vegetables, and he was helping cancer
patients. And you get the same benefit.
You get the it's the next best thing to the fruits and vegetables. It's not a vitamin. It's actually crushed, juiced fruits and vegetables that are dehydrated and put in a capsule or chewable. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And what's nice about it, we have research that shows that it does work when it gets in the body. Our bodies, you know, recognize because it's food. It's not isolated out like some
like
vitamins.
Like you might do
like
synthetically.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But then, of course, when you see the Tower Garden, you realize, well, if you're going to take the vegetables, you might as well get them fresh. You might
exactly.
as well grow them.
Mm-hmm.
And even some fruits, because you can grow strawberries in those things.
Mm-hmm. Melons.
Melons?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Melons, yeah. Cantaloupe and tomatoes.
And tomatoes.
Oh, tomatoes.
And they taste delicious.
Yeah.
And which is, of course, a vegetable.
Yes.
Even though there's that argument.
Is it a fruit or a vegetable?
A fruit or vegetable. And I have a rule of thumb. If you can put it on your cereal, it's a fruit. All right? I ain't putting no tomatoes
on. We're going to get a call in here saying,
I know we
hey,
are.
I put tomatoes on my cereal every day.
Every day.
I'm an oatmeal.
Yep. But the Tower Garden, what's interesting about it, and they can get up to 6 feet tall. You can get like a 5 foot. And there really are towers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's not like when you get a tower for your computer and it's a foot tall and you go, that's a tower? Okay. But these guys are towers, but they don't involve soil at all. Eden, maybe you want to talk about
it. No, it's all water. There's a big reservoir. How many gallons is that?
20 gallons.
20 gallons of water. So this thing doesn't move. It's not going to get blown over on a deck or in a backyard.
I mean, and I guess that's a concern. You, the folks who might want one of these because they're designed to be put in small spaces.
Exactly.
Like a patio, like a rooftop.
Rooftop, yeah.
Just where you can get full sun. But of course, at O'Hare, what is it? The skylight and augmented light?
Yes, they have both.
They have both?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume they're still going strong and doing very well. And mm-hmm. do they grow at O'Hare 12 months a year.
24
months a year.
24/7, 12 months a year.
Exactly.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right.
That's the beauty of these is that you can grow year round. With even in the winter,
but you need the light.
You would need the light in the winter.
I mean, that's the thing about.
And you would not be able to. You would more likely grow some herbs and
you're not
going to
do it on your rooftop when it's 19 below.
No,
I mean that's the other thing. If you got it on the rooftop, it's still a seasonal thing,
right? But there's a lovely dolly that fits right under it, and then you roll it back into your house, and you grow spinach and lettuce and all those.
Assuming
cool
you
crops.
Have the light, yes.
Assuming, but it has a tomato cage that goes around it that you can install lights on it, so you can grow indoors.
Uh-huh.
And we
and what kind of lights do you suggest?
The T5
system, yeah. There's other systems that I'm not familiar with, but that one works because I've used it myself and it's does a good job.
We just sold one to a interiorscaping company, mm-hmm. and they're going to put houseplants in there and use it in buildings as interiorscaping. They were going to put it inside of a decorative pot and then little moss to mm-hmm. cover the top of it and then just houseplants. So it's got various applications, not just vegetables.
I was just looking, I just sort of zipped on the interwebs here and found a story. T5 versus T8. How do you know if you really need T5 lighting? Let's take a look at the differences between T8 and T5 fluorescent technology and see how they stack up. This is important because the T5 lighting could cost you 2 times more than T8 lighting. Here's why. And they go on and on and on. I mean, it's if you're getting really sophisticated about this, there's all kinds of lights out there. I mean, I'm the guy who has in the past just had the shop light in the basement.
Right. Me too.
With the fluorescent to grow the seeds. But you can get pretty sophisticated about
this. Yes, you can.
All right, but I want to get to so if there's no soil, and it's and kind of a, you call it not aquaponics, but aeroponic. Why is it called aeroponic?
because it goes on and off. You have a timer. So, okay, so you have a reservoir of 20 gallons of water, and at the bottom of it you have a pump, and it pumps up through the tower, and then it rains down on the roots of the plant. So the plants are tucked in the small...
net pots.
The little net pots.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all, it's just bare roots. And so it rains down on there, and you do 15 minutes on, 15 minutes off. So when the 15 minutes off, you've got the air that's strengthening the roots. And mm-hmm. then 15 minutes on, you've got the water. So, but then even when the water is off, you still have the moisture in there. So it's air, but it's moist air. So it's mm-hmm. not just dry that they're totally drying out. Mm-hmm. They stay wet.
Okay. How does the plant stay in there? Is it?
It's tucked in with rock wool.
Okay.
So you can either plant the seeds right into the rock wool. I've done that with one customer. Pop the seeds right in the rock wool, and they germinate right there in the tower garden.
Wow. So you can even do seeds. You don't have to go starter plants.
Exactly. And if you haven't had the time to start your plants in January for your tomato plants, or February or early March, you can. I've also purchased plants, rinsed off all the soil, and then wrapped them in the rock wool and tucked them into the pots, and they're doing fine.
You don't want to make sure you get any of that nasty dirt in there.
That nasty, awful dirt.
Nasty, awful
yeah.
dirt. Well, that is interesting. So the roots just sucking up the nutrients
yep,
and
yes.
moisture
mm-hmm.
from more as it percolates down.
Yes.
It sounds like it's a combination drip and mist.
Yeah, kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of both.
And apparently the oxygen helps the plants grow faster. So the University of Mississippi did a study comparing the tower gardens with their regular soil fields. And the tower garden actually grew 30% faster, more nutrient dense even. So it's that combination of oxygen that the soil doesn't always get as much of. So
and you got that. You should see the root systems on these plants at the end of the season.
Oh,
sometimes
huge.
You have to go in there and trim the roots because mm-hmm. they're just they're huge. They're massive.
Now, the tower garden has a proprietary fertilizer, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But seems to me any smart person could find a liquid kind of fertilizer and use it in there.
Yes.
And it would probably work pretty well. So if you have a favorite way of nourishing your plants, mm-hmm. you could do that.
And what's good about that is there's a lot of organic fertilizers that have larger particles that wouldn't work in a regular hydroponic system, that they would clog the tubes. But
mm-hmm.
since this is this large pump that goes through, then the particles that are in these organic fertilizers will not get caught. So you can use a totally organic fertilizer.
And I guess that is something that we need to note as well. You talk about this pump. You have to have access to electricity
yes,
to make
yes.
it work.
Yes.
You guys need to do some sort of solar outfit. So
that would be great.
To power
Wouldn't
the
that
pump.
Be great? Yeah.
I think somebody is working on that. I think I did hear that.
I mean, especially if it's going to be on a rooftop and
exactly.
it's going to have
mm-hmm.
access
right.
to all that sun.
Yes.
That mm-hmm. seems to make sense. It might be a little more difficult indoors.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be something to try out.
Mm-hmm.
Very
yeah,
shortly.
Somebody's working on that, I believe. So
yeah, because
we'll
you just plug it into the solar thing if you're on the roof, and there you go.
Yeah, it just that would make total sense. So have you done any studies comparing this to other kinds of systems? We've got aquaponics now. Now hydroponics, you've got aeroponics. Mm-hmm. Everybody's looking for the latest and the greatest that will be the best way to grow food. And then, of course, there's those of us who are a little more traditional. But even more traditional means an earth box, you know, with
right.
soil.
Sure.
And even that is sort of, in a sense, new age technology.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What's next? But this thing holds 20 plants and it's
right, and you can get an extension, and you can go to 28 plants with that extension. So you can get a variety of different vegetables, lettuces, herbs, all in one tower. You can go higher, but you would need a bigger pump. So the pump that comes with it is for the 28.
Okay, I gotta stump the. the rep's question here because, and you know this, Eden, because you've worked in many, many vegetable gardens, that some vegetables don't play nice with each other.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if that's a problem in the tower, if you're recirculating the same water around the roots of different kinds of vegetables.
It doesn't seem to be a problem. The only thing you can't grow in there are the root crops, obviously.
Right.
You know, no carrots or anything. That would be interesting, though.
What?
To see if you could grow a root crop.
Has anybody tried? I mean, that would
be. Not that I know of. No.
They wouldn't have the space because you've got the little pots. Maybe radishes would be an interesting option to try, but probably not.
What's nice about the tower, what I like, it's so simple for a gardener that really knows what they're doing or the novice gardener that just wants to try to garden. It's just plug and play, and you can, you know, there's no weeding. It's easy for somebody like me that's not really a gardener like Eden here. So it just makes it simpler to get that fresh food every day. It's local growing, which is really popular. It's sustainable. It uses 10% of the water of a traditional garden. So you're saving on water.
And what's the, how quickly it grows quicker?
About 30%, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So your plants grow quicker.
So you're harvesting more often.
Ah, and a couple of good points there. Yeah, harvesting faster, but also the water usage is good.
Recycling. You're recycling the water.
Which is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to Eden Novak DeGenova, and it is DeGenova, and Karen Quirk. And if you want more information about this, they should go to www.degenova.towergarden.com. Okay, degenova.towergarden.com. And let's make sure we get that out. We'll get that out on Facebook as well. Eden, I want to talk to you a little because I haven't talked to you in a long time. You've been doing some interesting stuff, social research stuff, involving some of our suburbs, Berwyn, Cicero, Stickney, Garfield Ridge, and the health of communities. What have you been working on?
I was working on a project with University of New Mexico and these local communities to determine the health assets of these communities, because in the last 20 years, the communities had a drastic turnover of population, and there was no data. So they collected data from doctors, they collected data from to see where the food sources were, where doctors' offices were, and then my job was to collect the data, talk to the actual people in the homes to see what their health was like. And this data was going to go
because of a turnover in just population, or
yeah, well, it changed from those communities have gone mostly to Hispanic Latino, and in the last 20 years, so there isn't any data, health data.
Mm-hmm.
So what they were using was data from 20 years ago that didn't apply. That they were running programs that they didn't need to run, so they decided to do this health study. It had been done prior in Pilsen and the surrounding areas in Pilsen, because those areas had changed also.
Mm-hmm.
The demographics had changed there.
And I understand you were also studying, or you have been studying, the effects of vegetation in trees and other kinds of vegetation.
Yeah, that was going to be what we were going to try and do, to see if the areas that had less vegetation had more illness, more asthma, more those kind of illnesses.
If I had to guess?
If I had to guess, I would say,
I go,
yep.
Oh, boy, yeah.
But it would be interesting to have the actual data.
Yeah, you can't just guess, but because sometimes you're wrong. You know, you find out that those things, but certainly in our urban and suburban areas, I've talked about that on this show. I've had commercials about it, that how beneficial trees are, for one thing, and how they change people's lives, and they make people healthier and more serene, comfortable, on and on and on. And the same thing I would think would happen for other vegetation, even lawns. As much as I You know, I'm not a huge fan
lawn
of
person.
Even though I talk about it a lot because
it's
people want to.
It's still green. It's still green.
It's still green. It's better than asphalt. It's, I would say if I had a choice between asphalt and lawn.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to take lawn.
Yep. Yep.
But without the chemicals.
Yeah.
Without the weed and feed, folks.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
As I tell people, why do they call it weed and feed? Because nobody would buy it if they called it poison and fertilizer.
Right. So
wouldn't be a good marketing strategy, actually. Next, any great things with Tower Garden? What's your next step to get this out there other than coming on my radio show and the millions who are listening here?
Well, here my plan
she's got big plans.
Is I want a Tower Garden farm.
Okay.
That is run by people with disabilities, providing jobs for people with disabilities. And maybe it would be a UPIC, maybe it would be subsidized different restaurants, but that's what I'm seeing. Because as you know, my background is in horticultural therapy.
Yeah.
So I've always worked with people with disabilities and vocational training with those folks. And it's a great way. It's great training. It's easy. And they're good at it. So that's my...
And that would make perfect sense because when you see gardens that are designed for people with disabilities, so if they, you know, so they can roll up in a wheelchair or something like that, they're raised, and they usually have nice, smooth surfaces to get around on. Uh-huh. That's really important.
Sure.
And a tower garden...
This is perfect.
...is a very small footprint that you could move around. Where would you envision something like this being? Do you envision it as indoor or outdoor?
I envision it indoor. I would like to see the city of Chicago donate one of their big warehouses.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And then we would set up lights and so forth. Or maybe it would be half. I don't know. We'd have to see what that looked like. But probably indoor so you could grow year round. But think about it. We'd always talk about shopping local, this is about as local as you can get.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, shopping from our local farmers. This would be right down the block from you. And then you would be providing jobs, a lot of jobs, for people with disabilities and able-bodied people as well. But since my passion is horticultural therapy, I would like to see that.
Mm-hmm. What's the latest in horticultural therapy?
What's the latest? It's more towards vocational training. That's where getting these people out and getting them able to get jobs and provide for themselves.
And there are folks who talk about therapeutic gardens. And I always say every garden is therapeutic.
Yes.
Every garden. It doesn't matter. You know, you got one little... impatient growing up through a crack in the sidewalk. That's therapeutic, if you ask me.
Yes. Stop and smell the roses. That's therapeutic.
Stop and smell.
I stop and smell all the roses.
But don't smell the downy mildew on the impatience.
That's true. That's very true.
Well, actually, that's been an issue. In fact, I need to have Jennifer Brennan back on the show to talk about downy mildew. Yeah.
And what to do about it.
Are you aware that's been
an issue on the impatience?
Yeah.
No.
For the last several years.
It's
now like in 37 states or something.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Been a terrible problem with the impatience that everybody likes to get, the bright colors. But you can still get the New Guinea. They're not affected by it. But
because you're seeing a lot more of the New Guinea as opposed to the...
And it might be for this very reason. There's been a downy mildew epidemic. Apparently it's just going to change the way we garden. And the people who got flat after flat of impatience that they would just slam into the ground and the shade... You're going to have to go to plan B, whatever that is.
Like interspersed with other species of plants instead of
coleus or caladium and like begonia. And
like it used to be where we would plant everything as opposed to one
monoculture.
Mass.
So, and again, the monoculture comes to bite us in the butt.
Yep.
It just happens all the time. Well, listen, thank you guys for coming by.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And again, if you want more information, www.degenova.towergarden.com. And you can get information on the Tower Gardens and see if it's right for you. If that's something you want to do.
Add it to your regular gardening, your in-ground gardening.
That's true. If you got a space that, gosh, I wish I could put a garden there, but it's asphalt or it's roof.
Right.
Or something like that. Or, okay. Well, thank you both. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.
In the Green Room.
You dig.
In the Green Room with Mike has been brought to you by Christy Weber Landscapes at ChristyWeber.com, right in your own backyard.
If I say Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew, you're going to be waiting for a pirate joke, right? Well, shiver me timbers, I'm going to give it to you straight. Okay, the rest of this ad is going to be pretty straightforward, but no promises. Captain Jack's is a fast-working and effective product that works two ways, on contact or when the insect feeds. Captain Jack's controls all kinds of insects like caterpillars, beetles, spider mites, borers, and more. You can use it on vegetables, berries, and other fruit, flowers, trees, and shrubs. And did I mention that it's all natural? I just did. Captain Jack's an all-organic, let me try that again. Captain Jack's all-organic insect control, I feel like Johnny Carson, comes in an easy-to-use dust or a liquid concentrate, as well as ready-to-use and ready-to-spray containers that have built-in applicators. Pick up some of Bonide's Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew today at Wanamaker's Home and Garden Center in Downers Grove, Mel's Ace Hardware in Elmhurst, and Gensler Gardens in Love's Park. Or go to Bonide.com to find a retailer near you.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
My pappy said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln. Have you heard the story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was setting the pace? That story is true. I'm here to say I was driving that Model A.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Time to go to the phones and bring in meteorologist Ricky D. How you doing, Rick DeMille?
Good morning, Mike. Is it okay to say Happy Father's Day to my father in Pennsylvania, who's probably not listening, but he may be getting this over the airwaves some way, shape, or form?
Absolutely. I mean, you don't want to get caught not wishing your dad a Happy Father's Day.
Yeah, there's something about Mother's Day just seems to have more of like a, I don't know, it's more of a festive event where Father's Day is like, oh yeah, we gotta don't forget dad, right?
Well, no, the way it works is we do Mother's Day, then Father's Day comes along and people say, what, we gotta do that too?
Yeah.
It's just kind of the...
Yeah, and it's always nice how they make Father's Day coincident with the U.S. Open golf tournament because, you know, golf means get out, leave family. You know, or what is it? What's the other one? Gentlemen only, ladies forbidden. Is that how it goes?
Something like that. Yeah, I think so. But not so much anymore.
Yeah, no. I think we've figured out that that's not the right way of celebrating or at least talking about it.
No. And I'll tell you something. This is the one day that, and a lot of people take their dads golfing on Father's Day. that's the last day you want to be on a golf course.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's exactly what my dad's doing today. I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? He goes, well, everybody's going golfing today, and I'm going as well, even though, you know, my dad does on his part-time basis, he works at a golf course. And the only reason why my dad is going golfing is because he gets it for free.
It's a great gig.
Yeah, he's
if you like
one
golf.
Of those guys that sits on those, what are those golf carts. Yeah, the golf carts. And he waves around people. He has a big hat and a big flag. He goes, move on. Move on. Yeah.
Does he say that phrase now that they're using in the PGA, while we're young?
Yes, I think it's something like that. Yeah, and he gets $30 of tips, so he's happy every Saturday.
Well, good for him. Well, happy Dad's Day there. What's your dad's name?
Bernie.
Bernie.
Yeah.
Happy Dad's Day.
Or as my mother would say when she's mad, hun. There's always two of those.
Yeah.
It's all good anyway you slice it.
The secret language of couples who've been together for 40 years or more, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's 58 for them.
Wow.
Yeah, 58. And they say they've had two arguments in that span of time. Isn't that amazing?
Two arguments, and one was, why do we have to get married? And what was the other one?
No, one lasted 30 years, the other one lasted 28 years. So.
Oh, there we go. That's the joke. Oh, yeah, okay. Wait. I have to throw. Thank you very much.
Yeah. But anyway, things from a standpoint of rain around here have been doing pretty well. And I'm sure your garden has responded nicely, hasn't it?
It has. It's been a good spring for moisture. And it seems to come, every two or three days, right on schedule.
Right. And on top of that, I was talking with my students the other day, how the soil temperatures are really, really nice. Somewhere in the, I think it's, last I checked, it was 64 degrees is what the soil temperatures were, about 4 degrees below sod and below bare soil, which is fantastic. That's what you really want for this time of the year. And in addition to that, I was reading some of the information from the Illinois Farm Bureau. That's the weekly report that comes out. And believe it or not, some of the farmers were actually saying, I wish there was some bad news to talk about related to our crops because, bad news usually drives the prices up. But there's been so much good news from a standpoint of, not only acreage planted, but the fact that it's been, wet at a reasonable pace and a reasonable time and at a reasonable rate from a standpoint of inches. And I said rate twice, meaning how often occurs and how much occurs, that everything is doing really, really well. And everybody knows when you're a farmer, you want some amount of bad news so you can actually drive the prices up because it makes obviously your crop that much more desirable. But that is not the case. They've been able to do pretty well so far in the, I guess you can say, the late spring, early summer period here.
Excellent. Well, you've got to give some farmers some good news at some point because there are places in the country that are still experiencing drought. Although that's in mostly California, and I'm sure Annie Haven is listening in California. But you mentioned last week that the drought in Texas and the Southwest had been mitigated somewhat.
Yeah. The amount of rain that's come down across parts of northern Texas, Oklahoma, and particularly the western areas of Kansas, with the rain that they've had there and the precipitation that they've had recently, in other words, the stuff that they had in May and the stuff that we've had in the last week, has at least brought it down from what was extreme drought now down to what they call severe drought. And, we get these words that kind of, move around. So you go actually from exceptional drought, extreme drought, severe drought. But still the areas of California, Nevada are still bone dry. But you look at places here in Iowa, parts of Illinois, Iowa, obviously into Indiana, even into Missouri. And we're about as good as you can get for this time of the year. And we finally, this was only, I think it was last Monday, Sunday when we talked, it was still about 1%, believe it or not, of ice floating around on southern areas, southern shores of Lake Superior. It took until I believe it was the 6th of June, to finally get rid of the ice on the lakes. And you know, you think about it, even yesterday when we had a fairly nice day around here, the lake breeze kicked in, it cooled off, Lake Michigan water temperature still hovering at 40 degrees, and people will begin to realize how cold the lakes are when they go down to the beach today, tomorrow, into Tuesday and Wednesday, because we'll finally have a period of 4 or 5 days of warm weather where you'll want to get down to the beach. When you have that west wind, and that west wind begins to bring up the cooler water with what we call upwelling, then you'll notice how cold the lakes are. Believe it or not, the last couple of weeks, with the onshore flow, that pocket of water right along the shoreline, it doesn't move. It just kind of sloshes back and forth. Couple of sunny days, you can easily get up to 55, 60 degrees, and you go on the water, you go, this isn't so bad. But on the day when you start to get a west, when you get that upwelling, that's when you'll really notice the colder water temperatures. And that'll be the case today, tomorrow, Wednesday, or today, tomorrow, Tuesday, and Wednesday, even Thursday as well, as the pattern goes definitely into a summer one.
I'm wondering about how cold it was last night. I believe last night was the World Naked Bike Ride event. And
they, darn it, I missed it.
And there's one in Chicago.
I just want to be a spectator, just to see what's on those bikes. I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
Yeah, I don't know, but I hope they weren't too cold. That's all I'm saying, is that with that blowing off the lake. So I hear, rumor has it, that we're going to actually enter. Well, first of all, rumor has it that we'll have a summer sighting later this week.
Yeah.
And that the weather might actually be like summer.
Yeah, and amazingly so, as we've had some of these days where it's been somewhat cool lately, the month of June so far through the first 14 days, we'll call it halfway through that point, 0.7 degrees above average precipitation at O'Hare, and this is just at O'Hare, 2.42. That's about 3/4 of an inch above average. But what was it, last Monday and Tuesday, we had some of the heavy rainfall, particularly across northern sections of Lake and McHenry County. Nearly 3 inches came down. And actually, it was that Tuesday night. What was amazing about that event, Mike, is that was an event where we had 2 to 3 inches of rain, had about 1.5 inches here in the city, and we never had a clap of thunder, and we never had lightning, but you had persistent, steady, heavy rain. And that was that little mesoscale system that kind of trucked its way up through the southern plains and right into the upper Midwest. And it's these slow-moving storm systems that, you know, gardeners love, because it's not like you get these flooding rains. And even though the Des Plaines River did rise about 5 or 6 feet in a very short period of time, it wasn't a flooding-type rain. So most of the heavy weather, and usually when people say, well, we haven't had any flooding rains this summer, or we haven't had a lot of severe weather or thunderstorms, it's not that we haven't had it, we just haven't had it here. So across the southern areas of the United States, or we'll call it south central areas, Texas into Kansas, Nebraska, Missouri, parts of downstate Illinois, very heavy rainfall in that area. And typically that leads to the beginnings of what is normally a cooler spring, well, at least a cool later spring and a cooler summer, and also a more humid summer. And you'll notice that over the next couple of days when humidity levels rise due to the amount of, you know, evapotranspiration that's occurring. So bottom line, temperature-wise, precipitation-wise, Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, Iowa, as I've been saying for the last week, in good shape. And not only is it good shape in the short term, but great shape for the medium term, particularly if you get into a hot pattern. You like to have that subsoil moisture because it protects you from what we had the last couple of years. Remember the term flash drought, where we had a very, very dry spring. We got hot and dry, and everything just dried up really quickly. So there's not much more you can say about the fact that the moisture that we have had, the supplemental moisture, is good from the standpoint we have during the wintertime, but the recent rain has made it good as well, particularly when you protect yourself from dry weather that could be coming our way, but doesn't look like it at this point.
It shows how different one year is from the next, and you never know how it's going to go.
Yeah. And the thing also is when the Hurricane Center issued their climate watch, or at least hurricane watch for the summer, They put us generally near or slightly below average.
Right.
Which was based on the fact that El Nino seemed to be increasing somewhat across the central areas of the Pacific Ocean. But then just in the last week, some of those forecasts have been pulled back a little bit for what the effect of El Nino was going to have. And that's okay that you do that. It doesn't mean that the version that you put out in March is the version that's going to take place in June. That means that we've gotten a little bit better at understanding the short-term changes and the medium-term changes of these sea surface temperatures across that area of the Pacific Ocean. Even though the waters are pretty warm in the Atlantic and the Pacific, we still continue to have this very strong subtropical jet stream. Those are the things that kind of blow at 40, maybe 50 miles an hour between, say, around 10 degrees north latitude and about 30 degrees north. And what they generally tend to do is they tend to shear off the top of any tropical storm systems. So that's where the El Nino-type jet stream aids in the, if you want to call it, the inhibition of tropical storms to develop. Because there's been a couple already. There's been, we're up to number three, Christina, down in the Pacific. And believe it or not, the long-range models continue to show some development of something in the Atlantic, or at least the Gulf of Mexico, over the next day or two. And it's been very, very consistent on showing something like that, which is kind of early in the year. Usually you don't get something in the month of June. But the fact that there is something developing shows that the tropics are wanting to become active. So it's nice to have that little stopgap of a weak El Niño jet that would kind of hold it back to some degree. And I think that's part of what's going to happen. So bottom line here, forecast-wise, sunny this morning. There's a lot of thunderstorms out across parts of the central part of the United States that, believe it or not, dissipated pretty quickly overnight. But once that line becomes a little bit more energetic later on this afternoon, it should be through here sometime between, say, about 3 o'clock and about 6 o'clock. We still are under a slight risk for severe weather. That's the possibility, about a 30% chance for some storms to develop that could produce severe weather. But right now, it looks like the bulk of that activity will generally stay to the south and west of us. So big rains up across Minnesota this morning, big rains down across Missouri. Once that system crosses through us, we'll probably get about a half inch to maybe an inch of rain, which will be needed. We can use a little bit of rain after the last couple of days of dry weather. Mm-hmm. And then we get right back into some nice weather for Monday and Tuesday. Thunderstorms probable late Monday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, all 4 days. Readings generally in the mid-80s. So we could be talking, Mike, by this time next week of 6 to 8 degrees above average and 1 to 2 inches of rainfall as we head into what would be the first week of we'll call it astronomical summer.
Okay. One way of doing it. All right. Well, thanks, Mr. DeMaio, and have a great Father's Day, and happy Father's Day to Bernie.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
Hit a bucket. All right. Next hour, art and nature. Stick around.
Come down, Selecta.
It's the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Here he is again, Mike Novak. Everywhere I move, the more I see, the less I know. But I know one thing, that I love you.
I love you, I love you, I love you. And as Soupy Sales used to say, and I love you too, and give your a great big kiss. Mwah! Soupy Sales, my hero. My whole career has been based after Soupy Sales. All I need now is a pie in the face. If you could find a pie we would have to videotape it too, or at least get a photo of that.
Is this a challenge? You're looking at me like, no. Get the pie, Carol.
Get the pie. No.
Dennis, I bet, will get.
I know. That's just, so don't say.
I got to block the door.
Yeah, lock the door. I'm going to lock it from the inside here. We're stuck in the studio for a while. I just saw, did you see Facebook here? What just came across? Go to my page.
I'm on Facebook.
The very top from Brett Angelos.
Why can't I see it?
Refresh.
I got to refresh. Well, also I saw on Twitter the vertical gardens are at the Museum of Science and Industry.
Are they?
Yeah.
I meant, are they?
Yes, they are.
I was speaking to the mic. Really? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Someone posted that. That was very cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Now, have you refreshed? Not the Mike Novak show, but my personal page, Mike Novak.
Oh, no. I have to go to Mike Novak. I don't stalk you on your page. I'm on. Oh, I see. You made the sports section.
I made the sports section of the Sun Times.
Very cool.
Thank you very much. You wonder how I made the sports section of the Sun Times?
I do.
I have many talents. Many, many talents.
Is this another side thing that you're doing?
Actually, kind of. This was Joel Greenberg had the premiere of his film at the Peggy Notobart Nature Museum last Tuesday.
Oh, you told me about this.
That's right.
You had a busy week.
I did have a busy week. We had
You should have a catch all of us up.
All right. Well, this was Tuesday, and it was the premiere of From Billions to None, which is the name of the film that, in fact, I think we have a photo on the homepage, MikeNovak.net. Yeah. It's a documentary about the passenger pigeon. It's called From Billions to None, The Passenger Pigeon's Flight to Extinction. I'm the narrator of that film. And graciously, Joel Greenberg and David Mrazek, I think he pronounces it Mrazek. Maybe it's Mrazek. I should know. He's the director of the film. They brought me in to do some narration for the film, for which I'm very grateful. They had the premiere of the film, and it's going to be on PBS. They're working to get it all over the country. We got a call pouring in, I see here. The premiere was at the Peggy Notobart. A lot of folks there. And I had my photo taken there because Dale Bowman from the Sun-Times, who has worked with Joel Greenberg on other things, came to the premiere and then wrote a story and took our photos. Dave and Joel and me, and it's now in the sports section of the Sun-Times today. So I got to grab me a copy of that or several. And it got posted on my Facebook page. So that's really cool. So that was Tuesday. Wednesday was the tour, the waste and recycling tour that we did with the Southeast Environmental Task Force and Tom Shepard. And that was really fascinating. Every time I go on one of those tours, I learn a ton of stuff. From Tom. Tom knows a lot about what's going on the south and southeast side of Chicago, especially when it has to do with waste and recycling and environmental degradation. And it's a shame he has to know that much stuff, but it was a cool tour, and we got to see a recycling facility, and we got we drove up to the top of a landfill where there is a food and yard waste composting with windrows. And then we got to go to the Koch brothers operation, KCBX terminal, on the Calumet River and view the pet coke piles. And what was interesting about that is, of course, the security was watching us very, very closely. They're obviously not really thrilled that buses roll up and people get out and point to the pet coke piles. Well, you know, the way you could make that go away is make the pet coke go away. Then you wouldn't have that anymore. You wouldn't have to worry about buses driving up. So that was a part of the week as well. It was busy. Oh, and the other thing was, also, if you go to MikeNovak.net, MikeNovak.net, you'll see me holding the very first copy off the presses of my brand new book, Attack of the Killer Asparagus. We will have them, gosh, I think within about 2 weeks, we will have the orders in And we will be shipping them out to the people who supported us on Kickstarter. And you will be able to order. You can order right now if you go to Around the Block Press. And you can link to it right on my homepage, MikeNovak.net, or just go to AroundTheBlockPress.com. And you can order Attack of the Killer Asparagus and Other Lessons Not Learned in the Garden. And it's kind of cool to hold your own book and say, I wrote this and it only took me 11 years. It's I'm not exactly prolific when it comes to writing stuff. And before we get to Sharon Bladholm, who's being very patient, sitting in here and talk about her art, I got this email last week. I think I got it last Sunday. From Susan, who writes, we live in the northern suburbs and listen to your show every Sunday. I have a short story about our backyard. In the spring of 2013, my son decided to make our backyard into a native plant sanctuary for wildlife. He planted native plants and non-genetically modified vegetable seeds. This year, everything is wonderful in the backyard. We have a native plant garden, a vegetable garden, an herb garden, a rain plant garden, and a bug garden with a bug hotel. Not exactly sure what a bug hotel is, but they have a bug hotel. He planted flowers for bees, butterflies, and hummingbirds. We are getting about 10 sightings a day of hummingbirds, which makes me jealous. A lot of bees pollinating and quite a few monarchs. And I have not even seen one monarch yet this year. Even though we have milkweed in our community garden, I haven't seen a monarch. We have quite a few birds coming through that we have never seen before. We have ducks that come every day to feed and even some orioles. We do not put down any pesticides and the fertilizer we use is just compost. Everything is thriving. We do have some dandelions and clover, but we leave that and the bees pollinate them and then the rabbits and sparrows eat them. My son took care of the animals in the winter, too, by making sure they had enough food and always a source for water. We actually had 3 crows over the winter who would come every day to feed and drink. They were welcome. Just wanted to let you know that even a little effort can be seen as helping nature. Just like the quote from the movie, if you build it, they will come. That is what is happening in our backyard for the wildlife, and that is a great thing. And Susan signs it. That is just the coolest email. In fact, it makes me think that maybe I should have a, you know, Hal Sparks does this happy ending at the end of his show every week. I'm thinking maybe I need a what's happening in your yard kind of segment. Like that for folks. So folks, if you want to write in and be part of, and I don't know what to call it. I have to come up with a name for it. And the smart people who listen to my show will do that. They'll come up with something, I'm sure. But Susan, thank you so much for writing. That's a great story. I'm wondering exactly where they live. That would be interesting to know, but it sounds like, and I've been told this before, it doesn't take much. A few native plants and they will come. You know, our native flora encourage our native fauna, and the insects will show up, the butterflies will show up, and butterflies being insects, birds. And it doesn't take you don't have to rip everything out and start over. Although I'm incorporating a bunch of natives that I got at the native plant sale in Will County a couple of weeks ago. Been sort of adding them little by little into the garden. Can't wait to see what happens there. I'm glad you're with us. Second hour of the Mike Novak Show in the studio with me right now is Sharon Bladholm. Sharon, good morning.
Good morning.
You can pull that mic right over to you there.
Okay. About like that?
There we go. Yeah.
Okay.
You sounded okay. Just make sure we have quality here.
Yes.
It's all about the quality on this show. I first found out about Sharon when I visited the Open Lands Lakeshore Preserve up in Highland Park, the old Fort Sheridan area, and was walking down a hill towards the lake, turned a corner under an overpass there, and suddenly there's these medallions, bas-relief of various organisms.
Yes, they're soil microorganisms, actually, all of them.
Right, yeah. Which is not the usual thing you have a bas-relief on a retaining wall portraying or representing, but it was very cool. And I can't even remember, you know, you and I have been unable to, in the mists of time, because this is almost 3 years ago, remember, who was it?
Actually, I checked our old emails, and it's Dan Glicken who put us
Dan!
In touch. Yes, yes.
Dan, baby. He's a listener to the show.
Yes, and I met him through a mutual friend. And
formerly,
you know,
a musician, formerly involved with the Siegel Schwal Band.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I even knew that.
Yeah, yeah, that goes way back in the mists of time. And he has sent me music before, and I hope he's listening today, because I'm so glad I could finally put that together. But he said, yeah, you want to know, you should meet this person who did this art. And one of the great things about the North Shore, the Lakeshore Preserve, the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve, is the art in it. There's all kinds of different art, and there's probably been a bunch added since I haven't been there in a couple of years.
Actually, they haven't added any yet. They did, when we were in our phase of creating artwork, they did indicate they may do more at some point. But yeah, there's artwork by Vivian Visser, Kate Friedman, myself, and Olivia Petrides.
How did you get approached about this?
Well, it was a call. It was a public art call, so I had to submit first a portfolio. And it was, from what I heard, pretty competitive. I'm not exactly sure how many people initially applied, maybe close to 100. Then they narrowed that down to about 20 people that they invited to do a site visit. Lisa Roberts was the coordinator, kind of the liaison or curator, working with the artists and Open Lands. And so 20 of us went up there, made a site visit, and then from the site visit, because they did want it to be very site specific, then we did drawings, and we could pitch, well, like a, you know, like basically gave an idea of what we would do. And
I got this idea for bugs. They're really tiny bugs.
Well, actually, I pitched 10 different ideas.
Really?
Yes.
Oh,
I had a whole book of ideas with a drawing and a couple paragraphs for each one. And I had a lot of interesting ideas, I think. I had one about pollen, leaves, intelligent hearts, a lot of different things. But the soil one was actually one of the last ones that I generated for my book. And it was, I want to give credit to Jim Nardi, who's has a wonderful book, Life in the Soil, A Guide for Naturalists and Gardeners. And I had actually just purchased that book because I do have a garden myself. And I don't know, I've just, you know, I didn't really know too much about the creatures that live in the soil, but I was interested. And so I got the book, and that kind of gave me the idea to, you know, well, this could be an interesting public art piece. And interestingly enough, that's the one they chose. So,
yeah, everybody needs to know about springtails, right?
Yes, yeah, springtails and tardigrades and bedeloid rotifers. There's a whole cast of
Gesundheit.
Extremely interesting characters.
Well, there are in there, and what? How is it you know about these things?
Well, I mean, really, my first, you know, in-depth study of them was, you know, I kind of used Jim Nardi's book like a Bible when they chose that piece. Then I started really narrowing down, reading his book, which had, you know,
what's the book?
The book is Life in the Soil, A Guide for Naturalists and Gardeners. And so it kind of goes through the different classes of creatures. So I was able to familiarize myself with this huge cast of characters and start narrowing it down. First, we were talking about 14 bas-reliefs that at a certain point, because of budget restraints, got narrowed down to only 10. I had to like drop the slime molds, which was tragic.
Slime mold, that's cool.
I know.
I mean,
slime molds
are
great.
That's where dog vomit fungus comes from, is a slime mold.
Right. And they're very interesting.
And they are, and they appear in your yard out of nowhere.
Right.
Sometimes you see this thing, and it looks like it bubbled up out of the earth, and it shows up literally overnight.
Yeah, and some very vivid colors, like bright orange and yellow sometimes. Yeah. But we kept some fantastic ones, like the tardigrades might have ended up being my favorites. They're also called water bears, and they're also found in water. So we actually had a criteria that we used that we would
Why
pick
were they
things.
Your favorites, though?
Well, they're just so intriguing looking. I would encourage anybody to Google tardigrade and see what they look like.
Right, you got to spell that, of course.
Okay, it's tardigrade, and I believe there's an E on the end. It's Italian. It means slow stepper in Italian.
T-A-R-D-I-G-R-A-D-E. Yeah.
E. I think there is an E.
There's an E, yeah.
And they're also, their common name is water bear. And
oh, you know where I've seen those?
Where?
On Cosmos.
Oh, okay.
With Neil deGrasse Tyson. They show up several times. You see them swimming.
Uh-huh.
And they're just so alien looking. They look like the Michelin Man microscopic.
Yes, they're kind of puffy.
Yeah.
There's armored ones that look like they have little plates of armor, and then there's other ones that are called naked tardigrades, and they're kind of puffy.
Ran on the bike ride last night,
looking.
Maybe? I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah. They are classified as extremophiles, organisms that can thrive in a physically or geochemically extreme condition that would be detrimental to most life on Earth.
Yes.
And I think that's in Cosmos how they were portrayed. For example, tardigrades can withstand temperatures from just above absolute zero to well above the boiling point of water, pressures about six times greater than those found in the deepest ocean trenches, ionizing radiation at doses hundreds of times higher than the lethal dose for a human, and the vacuum of outer space. They can go without food or water for more than 10 years, drying out to the point where they are 3% or less water, only to rehydrate, forage, and reproduce.
Yes. I mean, they're pretty amazing. That's what I also learned in my research. Like, there's a story of one that came alive on a museum specimen that was 120 years old in a drawer. And when it got a little hydration, you know, it came back alive. And then there's this great story about this one that went to outer space. I recently learned when I was in an insect museum out at UC Davis, I was talking to one of the entomologists, and she confirmed that it was on purpose that they took this tardigrade to outer space, and it didn't have a space suit, obviously. And, you know, it survived just fine the trip into space and back. So they're, yeah, when they go into this cyst-like state, as you just mentioned, when they're 3% alive, they're extremely resilient. And, you know, scientists are actually studying how they could recreate this state. I think it's called cryptobiosis, where, you know, they're only like 3% alive and then can rehydrate and come back alive.
Sometimes on Sunday mornings before the show starts, I'm 3% alive. Then I have coffee and,
right.
And I'm okay. But it's a different story. And I said tardigrade. It's tardigrade.
So it is tardigrade. Yeah, I've been saying tardigrade. Yeah, they were actually discovered by an Italian scientist whose name I cannot remember.
By the Italian biologist. No, wait. First described by
yes.
German pastor Johann August Ephraim. Oh, boy. Goeze. Go easy.
Aha.
Like Goethe to the street. Goeze. In 1773, the name tardigrada, meaning slow stepper,
right,
was given 3 years later by the Italian biologist Lazzaro Spallanzia. Spallanzani.
Of.
There we go.
Uh-huh.
Yikes. Since 1778, over 1,150 tardigrade species have been identified.
Wow. Yeah. Actually, I was excited when I was at that museum at UC Davis. They said they had I think, the best or one of the best tardy gras collections in the country. So I may have to go back out there, but I'm sure I could also find plenty to work from right here at our wonderful Field Museum, where I often do a lot of the research for my projects, which I did a lot of the research for this as well, using books and in their library.
So you said that tardigrades did not make the cut?
No. The tardigrades did. All absolutely. Right, all right, all they right. ended Whew. Up being wow. my, yeah, no, we can't cut the tardigrades.
No, you got to have the tardigrades yeah. in there.
Yeah, we had, yeah, it was 10 different classes altogether. Algae, bacteria, protozoa, actinomycetes, tardigrades, mites, bedelloid, rotifers, and springtails were the, I guess it's actually 9 because we showed two bedelloid rotifers. All of them are round except for the rotifers. I made them this long, interesting shape that they are just to kind of break up the circles. But the circles, the idea was kind of like you were zooming in with a microscope, which indeed all of these things have to look at under a microscope. My original drawings, I showed a few things like ants and larger things, but Open Lands made the decision they really wanted to show this unseen, mysterious world that, you know, we do know what an ant looks like, but most people don't know what a tardigrade looks like or a rotifer. So we right. decided to focus on the, you know, really microscopic.
But
so.
They're everywhere. And
yes. And
that's the point.
Yes.
That, you know, when you talk about soils and if you've ever read Jeff Lowenfeld's book, Teeming with Microbes, A Gardener's Guide to the Soil Food Web.
I saw that book. I have not read it, but when I was doing my research, I did, you know, at a certain point I had to stop reading and start sculpting, but I do remember seeing that book.
You learn about a lot of these and the fact that they're all involved. And these, I suspect that he, and I don't remember whether he goes into these, but I'm sure he does at some point, but it just gives you an idea of the life.
Yes.
In our soil and in our biosphere, this planet.
Everywhere. They're inside of us. I mean, we're actually more microbe than we are human. That's a whole new cutting edge.
Well, I certainly am, but I can't speak for you.
And that's why this antibacterial soap is kind of crazy. I mean, there's microbes everywhere. You're never going to kill them all. You would never want to kill them all. They're important. I mean, we need a balance, but... they're actually extremely important.
Yeah, and there are, as you say, folks that they're constantly washing their hands and trying to get rid of the microbes that have kept us alive for billions of years on this planet, or life.
Yes, absolutely. And we actually want
life force,
healthy microbes on our skin, inside of ourselves.
There are studies that show that kids who play in dirt are actually healthier than those who are kept from it.
Absolutely.
And that doesn't surprise me a bit.
No.
I'm talking to Sharon Bladholm, this is about an installation right here, and we'll get into others, but this installation is at the Open Lands Lakeshore Preserve. And what's cool about it, you have these medallions, like you said, looking through a microscope. I kind of like that idea. That changes the art for me. But they're in a retaining wall, which is how tall is the wall?
The top of it, it was somewhere about 35 inches.
That's what I'm thinking. Just so kids walking there see these.
Literally
critters.
At eye level. Yeah, I was telling you the story of this little girl. I told the story of the tardigrade going to outer space, and 5 minutes later, a little boy came down the ravine, and she retold the story to him. But they were literally standing there with it right in front of them, you know.
So the idea was NASA sent a tardigrade. How did they make a spacesuit that small?
That's the whole thing. It didn't have a spacesuit, and it survived. And as far as
I
know...
Was it on the outside of the craft, or where was it?
I don't know.
I mean, that would be really tough to do, I would think.
I haven't read the details. This entomologist just recently told me that it was on purpose that they took it, but I still don't know like how it traveled. I first thought maybe it had hitchhiked a ride, and then they just discovered it.
But that tells you something too, and the fact that they can survive the most extreme conditions. My friend Mike Repkin, who's a biologist and works a lot on community gardens and on urban growing, he and I sat down one day. We were having a conversation, and he said the one thing, if he could do one thing in his life, it would be to prevent us from bringing anything back to Earth from Mars. He says, once you open that door, there's no going back. He said, we don't know what's there. We haven't found any life yet. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist there. And he says it's he really lives in fear of that.
And I was like, interesting.
He says don't send any robots. And if you do, don't bring them back here. I don't want them here. Because you don't know the unintended consequences.
I suppose there could be extremophiles that we don't even have any way to measure or look at or even understand
them
yet.
We have no idea how they would behave here, how they would react with other organisms on Earth.
Yeah, talk about an invasive species.
Yeah. Okay. Isn't that exciting? So anyway, Sharon Bladholm, we're going to talk more about this and other art that she does in just a second. 773-763-9278. If you got a question or a comment, if you know something about extremophiles, if you are an extremophile, you feel free to call us as well, and we will certainly take your phone call. Now, I've been told that summer is a few days away, but I've also been told that we live in a free country. You know what I'm saying? However, I do trust what I read in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine because, well, you have to have something to hold on to. And in every issue of the magazine, you can learn a ton of stuff even before you get to the main stories. Just read the Q&A column in the front. In the May-June issue, you'll learn what goji berries are and how edible they really are. You'll also understand why it's not such a good idea to burn out an old clump of poison ivy with a propane torch. Anybody got... You're cringing over there, Sharon.
That sounds a little horrific.
It does, especially when urushiol, however you pronounce it, that, you know, gets into the air. That's not a good thing. You'll be apprised of the best way to prune tomato plants, which seems like rocket surgery to most people, but can help make you keep a tomato plant from overgrowing your six flat. And then there's my column on the inside back page of every issue. Is it out of control too? Yes. Do you want to prune it? Yes. Will I let you? Just try, pal. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine at locations all over Chicago. Better yet, get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600.
Mosquito bites are painful and itchy, and mosquitoes can carry West Nile virus and other diseases. But there's an effective organic way to kill mosquitoes. Mosquito Dunks are America's favorite organic mosquito killer because they kill mosquitoes before they are old enough to bite. The active ingredient in Mosquito Dunks kills mosquito larvae before they become flying, biting, disease-spreading adults. Just float a donut-shaped mosquito dunk in ponds, bird baths, fountains, rain gutters, or any place where water collects to naturally kill mosquito larvae. Mosquito Dunks are deadly to mosquitoes, but harmless to pets, people, fish, and other wildlife. Each mosquito dunk treats up to 100 square feet of water and will kill mosquito larvae for up to 30 days. So don't let disease-carrying mosquitoes ruin your summer. Stock up on mosquito dunks. You can find mosquito dunks and mosquito bits at home centers, garden centers, and hardware stores.
Hi, this is Ron Calgo from Mighty House. Remember that raffle the Illinois Solar Energy Association did last year where they raffled off a car? You didn't win? That's okay, I didn't either. The ISEA had so much success with the raffle last year that they decided to do it again. But this year, you have a chance to win an all-electric Tesla Model S and a Bosch 240-volt charger for only $100. The Tesla Model S is one sweet ride and was ranked best overall car by Consumer Reports this year. To have a chance to win, go to illinoisolar.org and click on the Tesla Model S link link in the top left-hand corner. You can buy one ticket for $100 or four tickets for $300. Only 2,000 tickets will be sold. Net proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout Illinois.
Bosch Home EV Charger will be installed for free if the winner is within 50 miles of Chicago. Drawing will take place on October 4th, 2014. There is no limit on the number of tickets that can be purchased. Need not be present to win. If less than 1,500 tickets are sold, then the drawing converts to a 50-50 drawing. Tickets are only valid if sold in the continental U.S. The winner is responsible for all taxes, title, and destination charges. See the rules and regulations page at IllinoisSolar.org for more details.
I heard what they said. They said...
Science!
Yep. Okay, it's a Friday afternoon. Here's a hypothetical for you. It's a Friday afternoon, and I ask the question, who's ready for the weekend? Do you live in an apartment? Have a tiny garden? Want to spend some quality time in horticultural beauty, but you don't have the time to head out to the country? You should stop by Christy Weber Farm and Garden at 2200 West Grand Avenue in Chicago, where you can enjoy a beautiful yard with friends and music at the BYOB Happy Hour and Jam Session each Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. And I can guarantee that you're going to be happy checking out the fabulous selection of plants, annuals, perennials, vegetables, herbs, trees, shrubs, hanging baskets, tropicals, all right there in the heart of the Ukrainian village. Or do you need bird feeding or bee raising supplies? They have them. Even sod is available right now. What more could you want from your friendly neighborhood one-stop horticultural shopping location? Christy Weber Farm and Garden. Go to CWFNG.com or spell it out. Christy Weber Farm and Garden.com or find them on Facebook. Let them inspire you to create your own oasis. Famous.
Like Simone Weil. You're famous.
Like
Galileo.
Yeah, like Galileo. I have one of those people in the studio right now. She's famous. Sharon Bladholm, who's an artist in Chicago and has done a lot. You tend to end up in places like the Lakeshore Preserve and like mm-hmm. Garfield Park and
Peggy Notabart Nature Museum.
You have a wonderful stained glass exhibit. Do you call it stained glass?
Yes. I'm glad you saw that. Yeah, it's a stained glass window, and then that shows marsh habitat. And then I also sculpted our only endangered, thank God, dragonfly, the Heinz Emerald dragonfly, as well as some other dragonfly species.
Tell me about
species.
That. What do you know about that?
The Heinz Emerald?
Yeah.
Well, its last breeding grounds are, interestingly enough, up in Wisconsin in a little nature preserve that I've actually hiked with my parents who live in Door County, and that was around the time I was working on the project. But they're also found in Illinois, and they are endangered. Their habitat's being destroyed, so, they need to be protected. But they have information about the Heinz Emerald also at the museum within this whole, actually the exhibit is called Mysteries of the Marsh. And I also sculpted two Blanding's turtles in bronze, which were sort of a brownish color. Now, the last time I was there, they've become very shiny. They look like polished bronze now. And unless a cleaning lady decided to clean it, I think it's from the kids touching them, which is wonderful.
That's what I would guess.
Yes. And they're outside.
And you want that, obviously.
Yes. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And they're outside a tank of actual Blanding's turtles, which are actually, when I did the Peggy Notabart project in 2007, the Blanding's were only threatened. And they were, well, I don't know if you'd call it upgraded or downgraded to endangered. But the good news is I've learned.
They're making the big time now, yeah.
I've learned recently that the program that Peggy Notabart has, where they're reintroducing captive breeding them and then reintroducing them to the wild, is working very well, and the numbers are up. So that's good news for the Blandings, and their habitat is also, you know, really under duress.
I hate to think of any dragonfly endangered, because dragonflies are They're just really cool.
They are very cool.
And like butterflies and like the monarch. You know, it was interesting. Yeah. I was searching earlier in the day for the latest on monarchs and went to Monarch Joint Venture, which is a good site to find interesting stuff about the monarchs. You can also go to Monarch Watch. And I went on Facebook and saw a post from June 12th. And the post is, still waiting for the first sightings from the Northeast.
Hmm.
I have not seen any monarchs in the Northeast yet. Now, you heard the letter from the woman who had seen monarchs in her own backyard here. And it was interesting because I went to this conference on monarchs.
There was a recent conference.
At the Chicago Botanic Garden. And they showed the migratory pattern. And the way it happens is they come out of Mexico and kind of fly north, and some of them make their way to Florida, and some just go straight north, and they make their way to Iowa and Illinois and Minnesota and as far up, into Canada. But the Northeast is the very last place. And some go as far as Nova Scotia. But it takes a long time. That's like 2,400 miles for them because they're not traveling in a straight line, folks. They're butterflies. And the idea that you haven't, here we are June 12th, at least when this was posted, today being the 15th, and they still hadn't seen monarchs in the Northeast. I don't know if it's disturbing or not because the numbers are supposed to be up a little bit this year, a little bit. I'm not saying that, everything's fine. But we'll see. We won't know. I'm going to have Chip Taylor from Monarch Watch on the show later in the summer, and we'll talk about what's happening with them. But it seems to me you do a lot of glass work. In fact, you run a studio.
Yes, called Opal Glass Studio.
Right. And do you have a favorite medium to work in?
People often ask me that, and not really. Sculpturally, my three favorite materials are cast glass, ceramic, and cast bronze. So I like working with all three. It's kind of like more materials. You have a wider vocabulary. And then I've done the stained glass for, over 30 years now. So
I have to ask, have you ever done a monarch butterfly in stained glass?
Yes, I have, actually.
Wow.
I did a beautiful set of windows for Jill Riddell, who was also the one who brought me in on the Peggy Notabart project. She's no longer with the Peggy Notabart Museum, but she was for a long time. And, I did 10 small windows that depicted like native species of plants and butterflies in, this area, including the monk's parakeet that is not so native, but it's found down in Hyde Park, which is where Jill lives.
Right.
So
it's becoming native.
Yes.
I haven't seen any. I get down to Hyde Park regularly, but I haven't seen any.
Yeah, I have not ever been able to locate their nests, but I guess there's giant nests of them down there.
Although I was working with or went out to visit Root Riot, which is a community garden based on the west side of Chicago, and Seamus Ford, who runs that, was giving me a tour, and he pointed to a nest of them out that way.
Migrated on the west side. We have a big garden, but I haven't seen any yet. We used to have a lot of monarchs in our garden hanging in the trees, but I haven't seen so many in the last few years.
So you work in a lot of media. Glass is primary.
Yes, it's one of the main materials, the stained glass that I've done for years, and then using it sculpturally, as in cast glass. I also slump glass. That's a technique where you can take existing glass and form it. So there's many ways to work with glass.
How do you do that?
Well, you heat it up in a kiln, and then it slumps. It moves.
I figured that one out myself.
Yeah, so you can do things very organically with that process, or you can do things that are much more a very curved, particular sort of exacting shape.
And you tend to go for the exotic. I mean, starting with these microorganisms, but you also have worked on pitcher plants, or carnivorous plants.
Yes.
Pitcher plants are awesome.
They are totally awesome. I agree. I fell in love with them some years ago. I mean, I'd always been intrigued by them. And, you know, you always hear about the Venus flytrap, which I do like as well. But I've got.
Did you know that the Venus flytrap, okay, I found this out on the way looking up other things. The Venus flytrap eats flies as 5% of its diet.
Yes, I learned that too. The pitcher plants, which I've gotten so intrigued with, they're actually called passive traps because they don't have moving parts like the Venus flytrap. The insects come to the edge, they emit this sweet scent, the insects are attracted, they perch on the edge, they tumble down in, there's hairs growing upward that prevent them from crawling out. Eventually, many of them, a couple might escape, they fall to the bottom and get digested.
I have to quote you. This is what you wrote on your site.
Okay. What did I say?
Now I'll have to get into my announcer voice. One whiff of their sweet scent brings forgetfulness of sorrows, at least to the insects who slip into the deadly chamber and are digested by a plant that evolved this survival technique to compensate for the nutrient-poor, acidic bog environment pitcher plants dwell in.
That is true. And you can actually see pitcher plants locally, both at the Pinhook Bog, which is part of the Dunes National Lakeshore, but it's like a little square off by itself. Mm-hmm. And also at Volo Bog, you can see pitcher plants. And then
if you're, you know, you got a water feature, you just buy them.
Right.
And you put them in your yard.
Absolutely.
And they're just the coolest things.
Yeah, I love the shapes. I love the whole. But yeah, I learned that.
So you've done a bunch of pitcher plants.
Yes. Actually,
what kind of medium?
Out of, I think, often I do cross medium, but I think with the pitcher plants so far, I've only done them in ceramic and pretty large. I mean, I have some that are only maybe 18 to 24 inches, but I've done some tall ones of the species Sarracenia, which is a very tall pitcher plant, very tall, elegant form, unlike the chubbier Nepenthes, which are tropical. Sarracenias are found the most in the United States out in North Carolina. But I just set up an installation of five of them in a grouping of three and a grouping of two in the Rockford Conservatory at a show that just opened Friday night.
It's called R4.
Yes.
Right. Recycled, reclaimed, reused, recrafted sculpture show.
Yes.
Cool. So you've got that going in Rockford. You're also in the Chicago Sculpture International exhibit called Invoking the Absence. What's that?
That is a show, wonderful show. I would encourage everybody to go see it. You have a lot of time. It's up through October 26th.
Don't tell them that. Then they'll wait till October 25th.
Yeah, don't wait till the last minute. Go now. It's in the it's really a special show because it's in the Elks National Memorial, which is right at the end of Diversey with the parks like right across the street. It's that beautiful, mysterious round building you may have seen and wondered what's inside. Well, now's your chance
to see.
With
the big elk in front.
Yes, you can see the building, which is quite amazing. Murals inside, seven kinds of marble. It's just stunning. And the sculpture show is quite wonderful as well. 20 sculptors from the Chicago Sculpture International have all contributed one piece around the theme of invoking the absence.
Which means exactly?
Well, it could be interpreted in many ways.
Okay, you're just
go
so
see the show and you'll see 20 different
I'm not going to tell you what it means. Figure it out for yourself. And what's in the future?
What are you
working on? What are you in your laboratory now? What are you devising?
I'm always working on multiple projects. I've got more pitcher plants in the works. I'll be restoring some stained glass for All Saints Episcopalian Church. That'll keep me busy for a while. Another thing I do. I've got multiple projects going on between the stained glass and the sculpture. I'm going to be making another. We didn't talk about the orchid organ tree. I also just installed that in Rockford, which is a wonderful piece, which I could tell you more about. And I also want to create another tree dedicated to Carl Woese, which is a fascinating biologist who died fairly recently. And he spent most of his career in Illinois, and he discovered back to the thermophiles, he discovered a third form of life. So, you know, that really changed our whole, you know, the whole basically tree of life. So,
wow. And I did want to mention that one of the things you do all the time, or it seems that you're doing it all the time, is going out on expeditions with scientists.
Yes.
And
yes,
that's part of how you learn about these critters.
Yes, absolutely. I've had a big interest in the tropics, the New World tropics in Latin America mainly. I've made, about four or five. First I was making kind of my own expeditions to Mexico and Central America. And then I started collaborating with scientists. Once I went to the Brazilian Amazon, actually with an anthropologist, and spent time with the Yanomami people who live, indigenous people who live in the middle of the rainforest. And that was a really an incredible experience. And then I also went to the Peruvian Amazon with scientists, actually from the Field Museum and from Conservation International. It was jointly sponsored by those two entities. And we went down the full length of the Rio Pastaza. And I was the artist for the trip. It was actually Barry Chernoff who invited me. And
Does that mean along the way you're doing sketches and that sort of thing?
Yes, I was drawing. We were heavy on ichthyologists, biologists who study fish. We were also looking at the crustaceans and the plants. We found 44 new species of fish on that expedition, a six-week expedition.
Where?
So in the Peruvian Amazon, the Rio Pastaza was chosen.
So you found 44 species that had never been seen.
Had never been seen before, correct.
And in the time of your trip, we probably lost, you know, 1,000 species to whatever. I mean, we're losing.
Right.
We're finding species that we never knew existed, and then we lose them just as fast as we find them.
I just went to that. There was a great conference at Peggy Notabart recently about extinction.
Right.
And
yes,
I did a piece about that called Ghost Fish, Ghost Forest. I did a couple versions of it, but the idea was, I had these ghostly white cast plaster fish, and the idea was, when a habitat gets destroyed, you know, we're losing life forms we maybe never even saw or documented, hence the idea of ghost fish. But
well, if you want to know about Sharon Bladholm, you can go to her website, which is SharonBladholm.com. That's BLADHOLM. Or you can go to OpalGlassStudio.com. Or you go to my website, MikeNovak.net. I've got all the information up about the exhibit in Rockford and the one at the Elks Memorial and other stuff that she's done. You can see photos. Or some of the photos are on my homepage. You've got that bizarre aspiration, respiration, transpiration, and transmutation, which is basically, and it's, if you go to this week's show, scroll all the way down, you'll see a pair of lungs, a heart, and branches growing out of them.
Yeah.
What are you trying to say here, Sharon?
And the trachea is kind of turning into leaves.
Science fiction movie here.
Well, I worked with, the exterior of bodies for a long time, you know, the human figure. But lately I've been going inside. And, you know, once again, it's kind of the theme that permeates all my work. It's this about the intersection of human beings with the biological world, especially the plant world. So, you know, we're extremely dependent on both the soil that grows the plants and the plants that nourish us, whether we realize it or not. We are definitely in a relationship with the plant world.
Well,
so it's kind of about that.
Well, you do a lot of cool stuff, and I hope people will pay attention and take a look at it. And I really appreciate, I'm glad it after 3 years this finally happened.
Me too.
That you got to come into the studio and my very first art segment on the program. I hope you come back. Keep me posted.
I would love to. Yes. We didn't even cover half the things we talked about, but we did a lot.
That's the way this goes. That's
absolutely
the nature of radio. Thanks. And we will do it again. Now, in the game of organic gardening, it's pirates versus bugs. Of course, I'm talking about Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew. Carol, can I have an R, please? Got to pull that microphone over. I'll tell you what, maybe you could give me one, Sharon, like a pirate's R.
R.
R. She's better than you are, Carol.
I can do an even louder one or my dinosaur roar.
We'll pass on that for the moment. Cap'n Jack's is a natural, and by that I mean it's organic. And this fast-working and effective product works in two ways, on contact or when the insect feeds. Cap'n Jack's controls all kinds of insects like caterpillars, beetles, spider mites, borers, and more. You can use it on vegetables, berries, and other fruit, flowers, trees, and shrubs. However, I always issue this caveat. Make sure you know what you're going after. Don't use anything unless you have identified the pest and you know that you're not going to have collateral damage. Read and follow label directions. Cap'n Jack's all-organic insect control comes in an easy-to-use dust or liquid concentrate, as well as ready-to-use and ready-to-spray containers that have built-in applicators. Pick up some of Bonide's Cap'n Jack's Dead Bug Brew today at Pesci's Flower Shop in Des Plaines. Platte Hill Nursery in Bloomingdale's and Carpentersville, and Abel's Ace Hardware in Homer Glen, or go to Bonide.com, Bonide.com, to find a retailer near you.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health, or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city and north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
We're in home stretch here on the Mike Novak Show. I got a couple of minutes. I want to let you know about some things going on. And one of them is something called Dirt Shop, an in-depth composting workshop at Earnest Earth with Nancy Clem, who's been on this program before. It's next Saturday, June 21st, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. 2917 West Armitage. It's a hands-on workshop reviewing basic composting principles and then diving deeper into the why fours and how twos, as well as the differences between mesophilic and thermophilic compost technologies. That sounds like it's right up Sharon Blatholm's.
Yes.
You do. And if you want that information, you know what? We're going to post this. Would you get that, Carol, on Facebook so we could, because it's one of those really long URL things that if we don't do it that way, and I can shoot you the email so make sure that people know about it. And it's 4 to 7 next Saturday, June 21st. The Woodstock Garden Club is they're having a walk next Saturday, 11 to 4. Tickets and maps at the Springhouse on the Square. You can go to www.wpbw.org. WPBW.org for more information about the Woodstock Garden Walk next Saturday, June 21st, 11 to 4. My friends at KAM Isaiah Israel, Robert Neville and folks over there are having their Young Leadership Summer Program 2014 workshops. They have a July session, which is Sundays, July 6th, 13th, 20th, and 27th, and then the August session, which is Sundays, August 3rd, 10th, 17th, and 24th, and experience the world of urban agriculture with other Chicago area high school students. Yes, it's for high school. And if you want more information on that, go to KAMII.org. As in KAM Isaiah Israel .org. It's a hands-on training in KAM in their award-winning food-producing gardens, and it focuses on urban farming methods and sustainable land use. And it's they've been doing this for I think it's third or fourth year that they're doing this, and Robert knows what he's doing, and the folks down there know what they're doing. Also, finally, I guess it's not the naked ride that we had yesterday, bike ride in Chicago, which just there's so many ways that's wrong or impractical, I would say. The late ride, L-A-T-E, Light Up the Night, June 21st to 22nd. Friends of the Parks and Pedal for the Parks put that on. And that is next Sunday morning, June 22nd, 25-mile course. It traverses more than a dozen Chicago neighborhoods and the lakefront, so you might want to get involved with that. You can go to FOTP, as in friendsofthepark.org. We're darn out of time, and at this point we say go green or go home.